Hi, John. How are you and Dick this morning?
We are good, sir. And you're everyone back home there with you?
Good. Everyone's good here. And it sounds like our weather's about the same as yours. It's warm in the afternoon, gets a little cold at night, and there's not much snow these days. So I know you've had a lot of snow.
We've had plenty. You're more than welcome to come home and visit and get your fair share of it, right?
Nice.
Steve, give us your backstory and all. We've talked to you in studio before about your service in the Army as a career specialist and then as a civilian analyst. Talk to us a little bit about that and do a real quick scene center, if you would.
Yeah, I enlisted in the Army back in 1976, and after 6 years as an infantry guy, I went to officer candidate school and then was an infantry officer for another 8 years. At that time, the Army trained me to be a Northeast Asia specialist, so I spent 4.5 years in training, getting a master's degree in learning Chinese and Korean. And then after that, I spent 6 years as a negotiator at Panmunjom before finally retiring in 2004. After that, I spent another 12 years in civilian service, managing the community relations program here in Korea for our U.S. forces here.
So talk to us.
And that gives me a total of 29 years in Korea when you count the 2 years since I retired.
Well, Steve, talk to us. Your take on summit number two between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump is more of the same. What's your takeaway so far going into this down the road this week?
Well, I think it's going to be very similar to the last one. I don't think we're going to see a lot. Because they just haven't had a chance to agree to anything. Usually those things are, the agreements are worked out in advance, and it doesn't sound like they've been able to do anything. And to be honest, the North Koreans aren't going to give what we want, which is complete and verifiable denuclearization. They can't do it. They spent a lot of money and a lot of years developing those weapons. They think they need them to defend themselves, or at least as an insurance policy against a U.S. attack, and they're not going to give them up, ever.
But it is at least positive that they are speaking to each other, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. I suppose it's better than firing missiles and doing nuclear tests. But, you know, at the end of the day, the if you don't get something concrete out of that, you know, since the summits and this defrosting period has taken place over, say, the last 12 months since the Winter Olympics last year, nothing positive has happened in terms of making the Korean Peninsula a safer place. The North Korean soldiers are still where they've been. 70% of their force is deployed within 40 miles of the DMZ, you know, which is a in an offensive posture to attack. This is the world's fourth largest army, over 1.2 million men under arms. And so they're still very dangerous. They haven't gotten rid of any of their missiles. They still have their nukes. They still have their chemical and biological weapons. Just because they're smiling and saying nice things right now means nothing, because it's like the old story of Lucy and the football. You know, every year from 1950 to 2000, Lucy would have a strip where she'd invite Charlie Brown to come kick the football. Charlie Brown had run up to it, and then Lucy would pull it away at the last second, and she'd have these different quips that she would use on him. You know, one time she says, "Oh, I admire you, Charlie Brown. You have such faith in human nature." Another time, "See you again here next year." And probably my favorite is, "Again, Charlie Brown, and again, and again, and again." You know, each year we knew what was going to happen. And me and you and, you know, other millions of readers waited intently just to see how Lucy was going to sucker in Charlie Brown. Well, the same thing when we have these types of negotiations with the North Koreans. It's Lucy and the football all over. And so they're going to promise us something, and then they're going to pull the football out at the last minute and say, "Well, you guys didn't keep your promise on something." And so I think they're going to push to get some of the sanctions lifted with false promises. Once they get that done, then they're not going to fulfill their part of the bargain because they're going to say, well, you didn't do everything that you're going to.
Lieutenant Colonel Steve Tharp, retired United States Army Korean Specialist, formerly from Jefferson City, with us this morning on KWOS Open Air. Steve, talk to us about your time as a negotiator at Panmunjom and how some of this sort of is kind of deja vu all over again for you.
Well, for us, when I was up there in the mid-late 90s, early 2000s, we developed a little simple eight-step do-loop process, which kind of describes the North Korean negotiating tactic. You know, first one, the cause of the appearance of tension. And when I talk about this, these steps didn't happen necessarily a week or a month apart, sometimes years. And so they would cause tension, and then they would blame us and the South Koreans for it. And then something would come along, and they would agree in principle for a major improvement in relations. That was their third step. Then the next few steps were just intermediate phases, intermediate steps, like setting artificial deadlines and demanding compensation and stuff like that. And that's kind of where I think we're at, is that seventh step. And step eight was a go back to step one and create the appearance of tension, a do-loop over the thing. And when I look at North Korea and negotiations with it, and I put it in these steps, it's really easy to see. Now, the problem with this type of crisis diplomacy is they have to keep raising the rhetoric in steps one and two. And we saw that 2 years ago in 2017, and that's when I was getting emails from friends and family back there saying, hey, is it safe there? Are you okay? Is everything right? And I'd say, yeah, this is what we do here. But that crisis led some in the media to speculate that this was probably the most extreme tension since the end of the Korean War fighting. And I'll tell you, there was much worse times. They just didn't have the media there to blow it up. And one of the problems we have is with the media, especially the foreign media, because they don't really understand. They have a tendency to want to blow it up bigger than it is. And we end up raising the stakes in the game, so to speak.
Hey, Steve, Dick Aldrich here. We just wanted to know, with China, of course, exerting influence on North Korea, how much does the fact that things may not be so rosy as far as the economy in China kind of affect their leverage when it comes to the North Koreans?
Well, the North Korean economy is so bad, Dick, that the Chinese, unless the Chinese just go through a tremendous depression, I would not expect to see that much a problem in North Korea. But if they do have a depression or a big recession, this is going to greatly negatively impact the North Koreans, because North Korea's economy, as you may know, failed back in 1990. And for 9 years, from 1990 to 1998, they experienced 9 years of negative economic growth. And then they allowed a market system in North Korea, underground market system, to kind of come into play just so that the people could eat. And that underground system is kind of related and reliant on the Chinese for help. So if China goes under, well, it's going to have an impact on everybody, but especially the North Koreans. And the North Koreans may not be able to handle that.
Steve, you've talked to defectors a number of times over the years, and now the latest round of them coming in. What are you hearing? What is the take on that, and the rhetoric in the popular media with the defectors out of North Korea?
Well, you have two kinds of media. The South Korean media, because the South Korean president is very pro-North Korea right now, the South Korean media is afraid to make big problems. By coincidence, I was in an interview with a North Korean defector this morning. He was being interviewed by an international human rights group. And one of his complaints about this summit is that both President Moon as well as President Trump have kind of forgotten about the human rights situation in North Korea, and the defectors that are working to get it improved feel like they're left on the outside, and they're afraid something may happen in this summit where they get stunted even a little bit more. The you talk about the defectors. There's been about 30,000 defectors that have arrived in South Korea since about 2000. Well, there's a lot more that made it to China but never made it past there. People don't come through the DMZ because it's really dangerous. There's landmines, and there's a lot of guys with guns trying to kill you. So it's just a lot safer to go through China. And these guys are really getting shut down in China because Kim Jong-un has his own wall up there. He and the Chinese have really reinforced that border. And where they used to have almost 3,000 defectors a year coming here to the south, they've cut it down to under 1,500 a year. And the it goes back to that the Chinese, and it goes to the North Koreans just wanting to keep everybody in.
Have things really changed under Kim Jong-un for the better at all, or are they, in fact, worse than under his father?
Well, again, talking with this defector this morning, he said that when he was growing up, he had a great deal of respect and admiration for both Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il, the grandfather and father. But he said the North Koreans today have a really low amount of respect for Kim Jong-un. And whereas they called the father and the grandfather by their titles, the dear leader and the great leader, they just call him Kim Jong-un. And so, and what he attributed that to was he didn't think Kim Jong-un had ever done anything to help bring the nation up, but he thought that the father and grandfather had. So Kim Jong-un may be on borrowed time, or he may last another 30 years. And you know, the guy that replaces him keeps going. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I don't believe that. But the short answer is no, he hasn't improved things. But he has tried to improve his public image over the last year, and it seems to be working, as the South Korean and U.S. presidents are both reacting positively to him.
KWOS Open Air, Lieutenant Colonel Steve Tharp, U.S. Army, retired, formerly of Jefferson City, a Korea specialist with us this morning. Steve, I guess for the folks back home here, what do you think ought to be the takeaway from this meeting to the average person out there kind of listening to the national stories we're getting it from Fox News and all? What do you think the takeaway should be for folks back here in mid-Missouri?
Well, just don't expect too much, and expect hype about what didn't happen. Just kind of like we saw the first time. This is really hard stuff. And since I've been working in this field since, you know, for the last 25 years, we've never had a U.S. policy that could really address North Korea, because there isn't a policy that can really do that. We can't get to where our goals match their goals because they're completely incompatible. And so the idea that we can come out of this summit, and now they may declare have a declaration of the end of the Korean War, but that's really artificial because, as I said, the North Koreans still stay, have all their guys stacked up on the DMZ, and we have a large contingent on our side, almost all South Koreans, but this is the most heavily armed border in the world. So we're not going to fix this overnight. We're not going to fix this through one summit. And to expect that we can is probably expecting a little too much. It should be the fact that we got another summit and that they're not doing nuclear tests and shooting missiles, I guess, is good enough progress in a year.
There it is, I guess, in a nutshell. And all this, for the American forces who are still stationed in South Korea and all, this was, for many, many years, really hardship duty for a lot of people who went over there, largely for mostly enlisted and officers. It was an unaccompanied tour where the family didn't get to go. How is it now?
Well, now we've got a brand new big base about an hour and a half from Seoul called Camp Humphreys. South Koreans paid for about 90% of it. Everything is really nice, very modern. But I think it's almost a little sterile. No one wants to move down there and leave the excitement of Seoul. During the when the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were going heavy, Korea all of a sudden became an assignment of choice for people, because not only did they get a bonus for coming and staying here, but they also got to avoid Iraq. And so the bonus had the initials AIP. You know, so people talk, oh, yeah, I'm getting my AIP. And so they get $1,000 or extra $2,000 a month or something, depending on their rank and how long they extended for. And for us, we the skeptics, we'd laugh at them and say, oh, yeah, the Avoid Iraq program. now people, it is such a foreign culture. I think the preference of most folks is still go to Europe, because it's still more like the United States. But the hardships that we faced 40 years ago when I first came here just don't exist anymore.
Steve, running out of time. Lieutenant Colonel Steve Tharp, U.S. Army, retired formerly of Jefferson City. Steve, always good to talk to you. Keep up the good work, and next time you're back in Jefferson City, we'll get you back on the radio and studio, sir.
Nice. Thank you very much, John, and glad to meet with you the first time, Dick.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate it, Steve. Thank you much.